Thanks for listening. And if you're a visual person, you can watch. You can go to TrinaWilcox.com or you can go to GritBecause.com, FitCat.org. It'll be there for you. But I am joined by Alicia Addison today. Hello.
Hi.
I'm glad you're here.
I'm glad to be here.
We're going to talk about a little bit of a sensitive subject. I feel like in society, we're getting a little bit better about talking about mental health and understanding that it's something that we need to take care of just as much as our physical well-being.
Yes.
But there's still a lot of stigma attached to sharing, and I think it takes bold people like you to say, hey, I've been through some stuff. Here's what it is. Here's what, you know, it was for me, and here's what might help someone else. So if you would go back a little bit and share what happened to you a very long time ago and how you dealt with it.
Well, yes. So when I was almost 14, I was attacked by three boys. Two of them held me down and proceeded to disrobe me. And I was lucky enough to get away, but it was still very traumatic. There were parts of the disrobing that they got to, and they were laughing and giggling. And so you remember all that as a 14-year-old. You remember having all that taken away from you and stripped. Even though there was no penetration and I wasn't technically raped, at that point in time, that's what they considered it. So it was hard to, you know, go back to school or go and function. I was very humiliated and very scared and didn't know what to do. So I retreated into myself. And I had made a suicide pact with a girlfriend at that time. And you know, it gets at that point in time, you just don't know what else to do, because you don't, what you did was, what they did to me was scary, but then having to explain it to someone else and then feeling like you're going to get in trouble because the reason that it happened was I was out and about where I shouldn't have been and I was doing things I shouldn't have been. So, you know, I didn't say much. So when people showed up, basically the police showed up to my house because my girlfriend had either told her grandparents, and so the police showed up, and my parents put me in a hospital for a week because of the suicide pact that we had taken together. After I got out of that hospital, it didn't get any easier. I went back to school, and by then the school had found out. All of the students at the school had known, and the boys that had committed the act were very popular boys. Mm-hmm. They weren't just run of the mill. They were the football stars, and I was not. Of course, I was a cheerleader, but I wasn't one of the popular ones. I was just a good cheerleader. So that made it hard, because at that point in time, in that day and age, they called it rape. When it wasn't rape, it was just a sexual assault. So basically, I lost all of my friends. All of my support system was gone. And then, you know, not knowing who to talk to or who to turn to. And at that point in time, even counselors were all male. And, you know,
it's
you wouldn't...
It's not comfortable as a young girl.
It's not. And it's even harder to talk to them about what happened or even why it happened or the fact that it wasn't my fault. And that's all I kept thinking about was that it was my fault. I did something wrong. I did something to either provoke them or think that it was okay for them to do what they did.
And know that it's never your fault. Even if you've snuck out of the house, you went against your parents' rules or... something like that is not okay. If you don't want it to happen and it does, it's not okay. It is okay to say something.
Absolutely.
Say something for sure.
Absolutely. That would be my biggest takeaway is absolutely say something. If no matter what the violation, even if it's just groping with clothes that are on, period.
No means no.
Right, no means no. If you didn't want it to happen, no means no. And absolutely say something to, whether it's your parents or your best friend or someone that you really truly trust, you know, definitely say something and get it out there so that you can cope with it too. And that was the hardest part, was I didn't ever know truly how to cope. You know, counseling didn't really work for me.
Mm-hmm.
So after that suicide attempt, we had, you know, I pretty much left Iowa. So that happened in Iowa, and I left Iowa, and I had moved to Florida, but it had never got better. I never mentally dealt with what was going on.
Now, did your family move because of all of this, or were there other things, and it was just an escape at the time for you?
It was a little bit of everything, yeah. My mom wanted a better life for all of us children, and my dad did too.
Okay.
Of course, you know, they're still together.
Right.
but they wanted a better life for us kids, and they wanted to get us out of Iowa. But yeah, I think besides the jobs and everything that was happening at the time, I do think that part of what was going on, my mom was like, I'm done.
Yeah.
And so we left there. I was almost 16 by the time we left there.
Were you excited and hoping you would feel better once you moved, or were you still carrying some dread that you didn't feel like you could shake?
No, I was hopeful. I was, you know, we moved from a very small town. Mm-hmm. It was a, you know, population of about 10,000. To a population of over 150,000. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my graduating class went from like 120 to 600 plus.
Wow. Okay.
So, you know, you kind of hope that you maybe fade away and mm-hmm. not be such a star. And that's not the right word, but you won't be such a...
So noticed when you don't want to be.
Right.
You could fade away
or
blend in.
Exactly.
Okay.
So I didn't do any of the sports down here in Florida. I didn't do any of the stuff that I loved. I kind of just reclused and still stayed away, but tried to make friends. But that was still very difficult, not mm-hmm. knowing how to make friends. So, yeah.
So, okay, so you're in this new school, trying to make new friends. And then you're not feeling any better?
No.
Or you just managed and posted for a while.
It wasn't, I never made friends. I mean, I had a couple, but I never really made true friends in the Florida area. And then there was another incident with another boy who talked to me during a class. And I thought, okay, no big deal. He's just talking to me. But the girlfriend got really mad at me. And I was like, I didn't even know you guys were together. Mm-hmm. And so it started all over again. People hating me for no apparent reason versus just talking and saying, hey, this happened. And then having that talk, you know, and instead of, and it's high school.
It's high school, yeah, right.
So,
everything's
of course,
major.
Yeah, everything was major. So at that time, you know, it starts happening again. So of course now I'm even feeling worse because I can't make friends. I'm reclused even more. So again, second suicide attempt.
Wow.
Yeah. And this time, so the first time it was going to be standing in front of a train, because in the town where I grew up, there was a major train that came through all the time. So I really thought that would be the easiest way to go, which is not typical of most of girls. You know, they usually take a different route. But that was our easiest route. So when I was in Florida, the easiest route to get to was aspirin, you know, medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the easiest thing. So I had taken a huge bottle of aspirin. I got really sick. Not necessarily, I didn't get close to dying, but that was my outlet, was to take as many aspirin as I possibly could. I got put back into another hospital. Again, this was more, and in Florida at that time, they had better resources for you.
Okay.
But it still didn't help. Again, everything was male-oriented. All the counseling was male-oriented. And it, it, I don't know if it wasn't just believed or what was going on at the time, you know, a lot of assumptions of whether I was being promiscuous or not, which I wasn't, but because that stigma is there,
yeah,
and you can't get rid of it, so that was even harder. So there's
right
attempt number two.
Goodness.
And, you know, still not mentally there. I still wasn't on drugs. Like, I didn't take any Zoloft or anything like that. You know, you just kind of power through and you figure out how to deal with what you're doing. And unfortunately, my drug of choice at that time was food. So
okay.
I actually took food away.
Oh, okay.
So I was not necessarily anorexic, but I was like what they consider now exercise induced anorexia. So I would exercise enough and eat just enough that there wasn't, but there was never that harmonious balance.
But again, control issues. So
control
you were
issues.
The one in control.
I had.
And you
yes.
had to have something that you were
yes.
in control of because nothing else seemed to be lining up.
Absolutely. And that was my thing.
So how long did that go on?
Years.
Do you feel okay?
Years. It probably started when I was. I knew the focus probably started around 17.
Okay.
When I was 17. And cured, not cured, better,
uh-huh.
mentally better
uh-huh.
for it. I will eat,
uh-huh.
absolutely will eat. But, you know, there's still that. I don't think it ever goes away.
You still feel like you have triggers and
yes.
that's your go-to method of
yes.
coping sometimes?
Yes.
Okay.
But I have my husband and my kids are huge support systems in that. And my husband is always telling me, it's okay to eat the ice cream. It's
so
okay to eat the cookie.
So you've got some awareness mm-hmm. now that you didn't before. And
right.
that's a big difference, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
When did you start seeing that transition of realizing, okay, this is an issue and I'm starting to be able to manage it. When did that start happening for you?
Probably about 5 years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
When
I got
soon.
Yeah. Well, I got really sick. So that's,
oh,
and that was part of the reason. Not because I wasn't eating. It was because I was exercising so much and I couldn't eat as many things. So I'd gotten really sick and so that was the realization of having to get food better in my life and understanding, even though I've always used food as a good thing, it's just understanding how to eat better, more nutritious, eat more and do less. And at the time I was exercising so much. I mean, I owned my own gym, so I was doing so
mm-hmm.
much
mm-hmm.
and I owned my own restaurant at the time.
Oh,
so
goodness.
It, there was just so much going on.
Right.
But where were we?
Well, you were transitioning out of high school into getting through your second attempt. And then where does your relationship fall into all of this? Where did you start feeling more comfortable to date again, to move into having a serious relationship?
Believe it or not, Brandon, my husband mm-hmm. now, we have been together almost 29 years now.
Wow.
So I met Brandon 6 months after we moved to Florida.
Okay.
So he's been pivotal in helping and seeing and being able to talk to me and tell me things are okay, and just be there and understand. I would say probably within the first 3 to 6 months of us starting a relationship, I had told him what happened.
Okay.
And so he's always known, and he's always been very gentle about certain things. And I think that's part of the reason we have such a great relationship is the fact that we've always been able to talk about that kind of stuff. So he's always been there, and he's always been a rock.
That's amazing. That's good.
Yeah.
So then this really hasn't had, or has it had, a negative impact on your relationship ever?
Not with my husband.
Good.
No. Mm-mm. With other people, yeah, I'm always very leery of talking to people.
Mm-hmm.
Men especially won't get caught in certain situations, won't ever really be on my own with a male. I had a comfortable spot in Florida where I ran with men, but they were married men.
Mm-hmm.
And And that was always...
You felt
safe? I felt safe with them because they knew my husband. Mm-hmm. They knew... And we were just a good group of friends, so I knew they would never hurt me. But, you know, just to walk into a room or walk into a restaurant or, you know, mm-hmm. there was always that apprehension. I've always been very nice. I've always, you know, no matter who you were, I've always said hi, I've made mm-hmm. eye contact. Mm-hmm. But that still, that is in the back of your head of, okay, is that person going to jump out and attack me? Is that person, you know, where's my safety zone?
Right.
So it's always been there. I think probably in the last 10, maybe even 12 years, I've been able to kind of be more empowering to myself.
Okay. Yeah.
And part of that was getting very physically strong, knowing that if a male did attack me again, I could take that male down.
Yeah.
And that's wrong to say, but not wrong to say. Like, you know what I mean? Like, some men would take advantage of that if they knew what I was thinking in my head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay. And I know that too. You know, and that I think that's what makes it even scarier is to know all those aspects
mm-hmm.
Of talking to men.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
And
when you were starting to feel better, you're married now, family. Were you worried about your kids suffering from any of the depression or anything that you had went through?
Yes.
And then didn't you say you suffered postpartum?
Yes.
Okay, so...
Yes.
So it snuck back up again, but in a different...
Yeah, so after I had Devin, who's my first child, I suffered severely from postpartum depression. It was bad, and that would have been... The third attempt was more mental than it was actually... I don't think I would have ever gone through with it, but... you know, I was driving down the road. I had him in the car, and he was a screamer. He just did not ride in the car well at all. And so he was screaming. I was already depressed. And a semi truck, you know, we were doing this, and it was coming at me. And the thought went through my head, just pull over.
Gosh.
And I didn't do it. I went by that semi, and I took a big breath, and I thought, I can't believe I even thought that.
Right.
But that's how deep I was. I mean, I was just down. Everything was gray. And I lived in Florida. Everything is sunny, but it was gray.
Right.
My world was gray.
Did you feel guilty for that? You know, you're in this place that's beautiful.
Yes.
You've got a husband, a baby, and then you're not feeling happy and fulfilled.
Yes. And postpartum is so weird. It's totally different than the other depression I went through, because with postpartum, I didn't want anybody to touch the baby. Like, I couldn't leave.
Mm.
Like, nobody was good enough to have the baby by themselves,
right.
You know. But at the same time, I needed a break from that baby.
Right.
And so it's not that I thought somebody was going to harm the baby. It was just that weird mental thing that you go through. And so postpartum was hard, and I luckily I did seek help that time. I did talk to my doctor. We talked about Zoloft,
mm-hmm.
and I was breastfeeding at the time, and that was my big thing was, okay, I can't be on medicine.
Yeah.
I can't be on anything because I don't want it to transfer the baby. And I mean, I did a lot of research with drugs, and Zoloft was the only drug that by the time it passed through the breast milk, it was supposed to be so benign that it wouldn't affect the baby.
Okay.
So I was on that until he was almost 18 months old.
Okay.
And I breastfed him until he was almost a year. But then there is that time where it just stops working. You know, like, you have to, for me, I had to kind of just step back and say, what power do I need to grab?
Right.
You know, like, how do I empower myself to get off the drugs and find something different? And at that point, I went back into the running. I went back into more fitness. I became a personal fitness instructor. I became a group instructor at that time. You know, again, another control thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what can I control? What can I do to control the demons that were in my head without having drugs?
Mm-hmm. Was this better this time? Was it a more positive outlet?
Yes.
Outlet?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
This was more positive, even though you know, you can still abuse exercise, mm-hmm. No matter what. You can mm-hmm. abuse anything.
Right.
No matter whether it's good for you or bad for you, you can still abuse it. So I did have still those tendencies because I had to control everything. I still would have a tendency to abuse exercise, you know, just do way too much. Teach 4 or 5 classes instead mm-hmm. of just 2. Mm-hmm. And then still turn around and do my own workouts besides that. Right. Because when I taught for you. I didn't teach for me.
Right.
And then I'd still have to do whatever I needed to do for me to be sure. Feel like I was physically.
Finding that balance.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So do you feel like you're still a work in progress then?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Big time. Devin, going back to Devin and the depression, Devin did suffer from depression.
Okay.
He's much better now. When we moved up here, it just got gloomy for him. And we actually sought out a doctor, and the doctor wanted to put him on Zoloft. And at that time he was 9 years old. And
oh,
I was like,
goodness.
There's no way I'm putting him on these medicines.
What were the signs? I mean, because a young one, I would think that in your first, was it hard for you to recognize or easy? Did you
no,
just know?
I just knew, like, you just, and part of it was A, growing up with it, and B, you know, my grandmother was very depressed and just, and she had different ways of showing her depression.
Okay.
Along with, you know, different members of my family also having depression. And we all showed it differently, but we all showed it the same. And with Devin, it was, he was just angry. He was just an angry child. And we finally just, you know, you do everything you can when they're that angry and they're that upset. When at 9 years old, there's nothing to be that upset about, you know. So we fought long and hard with everything that we went through with him, and we finally chose not to put him on a medicine, and I found an amazing acupuncturist who, love her, she worked with us great, and we were able to do some acupuncture and some herbs with him, and at the same time, I got treated, because of course, that put me back into a state of depression, and at that time, it was hard. I couldn't eat. They'd put me on Zoloft again, and it worked the opposite. I actually got more and more depressed.
Oh, no.
Instead of helping it boost me, it made it worse for me. So now you've got 2 of us that are going downhill. But luckily, once I got off that Zoloft, once I got him help, and the acupuncture for both of us absolutely worked. We did great on that.
Good.
Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
My throat's dry now. So after that, I haven't had much issue with it. That acupuncture treatments and doing the herbs that we went through, we did seeds in the ear and everything for both of us. Really, from that point on, I haven't had any major depression issues. And that's so since I've moved up here, the massive depression that I had suffered mm-hmm. for so many years was gone.
How do you keep an eye on things? How do you make sure that this is continuing to work, or when you need to change gears and, or even go back to medicine?
I think for everybody it's different.
Uh-huh.
For me, it's that gray feeling that you see and you can feel unless you've ever been depressed, like, you don't understand it. But people that have been depressed and then kind of come out of it and then go back into it, they understand, like, it could be a beautiful sunny day outside and you see gray. Like, you see that gray mm-hmm. and you feel that gray. So it's more of being able to recognize and maybe even recognize the triggers and then figuring out what works for you. Mm-hmm. Is that getting in more sunlight? Is that, you know, more outdoor activities, more hiking, more running, you know, doing things that make you happy and trying to find those outlets that do make you happy. So for me, even though I get little small anxiety attacks mm-hmm. and little small panic attacks.
Right.
But those come from what I went through 5 years ago versus the depression. And I just try to know that I've got friends and nobody's mm-hmm. out to hurt me mm-hmm. and I can still power through and I can still go to the social events and not have that.
Right.
And not recluse back and be that corner wallflower that can, you know, you have that tendency to just not get involved.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the biggest is, you know, watching for those signs.
What about for people, I know it's different for everyone, but for you, how can your friends support you better? How can your family support you better when you are going through things or you're having a dip kind of day? Or, you know, I think that sometimes the friend, the other friend doesn't always know how to deal. You don't want to be overbearing or say, hey, are you having an episode? But maybe that is what needs to be said. What do you suggest?
Since I don't have that many these days, I can reflect back into when I was younger,
right?
Where I had most of the problems. And if you see someone start to recluse or do the things they, you know, like if they were always your running buddy and all of a sudden they stop being your mm-hmm. running buddy, don't hesitate not to say something. Say something.
Okay.
What's going on? Why? What happened? You know, with me as a child at 14, I stopped eating. I would take my food up into my room. I stopped talking to my friends. I acted out as well. I would do things out of the not norm of my character. at the age of 14, I brought beer to school.
Oh my God.
Which, you know, yeah. Like why would someone who, it was such a good child, I mean, that was me saying, I need help.
Yeah.
I needed to do something, so I would act out to get anybody just to say something to me. I still wouldn't come out and be like, hey, I would, you know.
Right.
You still have that tendency not to say anything, and you still push away, but it was, I'm starving for that. I need help, but I don't know how to tell you what's going on.
Okay. So they can ask and not give up.
Mm-hmm.
Don't give up.
Because
more than likely, like you're saying, you're not going to say right off the bat. You need to build some trust there.
Yeah.
They need to know that, you know,
yeah.
It's going to take time.
Yeah. And there were other signs too that you hide. Like I cut myself. I all along my arms. And in the winter in Iowa, you wear a lot of long clothes all the time. So it was easy to hide. I never had to show my arms. I could always just have those cut marks on my arms and nobody knew what was going on. And because I've always had long hair, I shaved everything down here, and that was another act of rebellion for me. So I shaved all this, but, you know, to hide that from my mom,
yeah,
you know, it's just pretty easy just to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as I would pull my hair back,
mm-hmm.
you'd see it. And so I'd go to school, and I'd pull my hair back so that people would see it, but as soon as I got home, I'd leave it long.
Mm-hmm.
So there's ask, talk, yeah, especially talk. If it's your child, you know. Just push a little bit, but not too much. Let that child know you're there for them no matter what happened. You're not going to get in trouble for it. And I think that was my biggest thing. I always thought I was going to get in trouble for everything that I was doing because of how we grew up and who we were. And in that time in the society, it wasn't okay. It's not okay to be that person.
Yeah.
It's not okay to have mental demons. And that's what we need to pull away from is mental demons, they're bad,
mm-hmm.
but we've got to figure out how to talk to people and make it not such a stigma.
Right.
You know, everybody has them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I think everybody, no matter where you go, everybody has a mental demon, and everybody's is different.
Yeah, just learning to deal with those. Mm-hmm. And I did want to give the National Suicide Prevention Hotline number. It is 1-800-273-8255. You can also go to suicidepreventionlifeline.org. And maybe it's not you. Maybe it's someone that you know that's going through something. You can also use that number, website, to see how you can help. And don't be afraid because it's someone's life.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing. It's very courageous, amazing. And I'm so thankful that you're brave enough to say that you're still working on things, and you're brave enough to keep working on things and sharing that too, so other people can do the same. Yeah. So thank you so much.
No problem.
Thank you.
Bye.